If we are to be worthy of the calling with which we have been called by Jesus Christ, the first two steps are these: humility and gentleness. To become meek and lowly.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to say thanks for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church podcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This podcast can be found on iTunes by searching for Terry Bailey Ministries in the iTunes store, where you can also subscribe to the podcast and get the weekly message sent automatically to you by clicking the subscribe button. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Terry as he preaches this week's insightful message.
Thank you, Seth. And to everyone, a happy Valentine's Day. The holiday of love. I have frequently wondered how Valentine's Day got situated in February. I wondered for a while if it wasn't because February happens to be skunk mating season, and figured that probably wasn't it. So I did a little, did a little bit of research. Turns out in medieval times, the feast was instituted to celebrate three martyrs from some centuries earlier. Three martyrs in the year AD 270, all three executed close together by the Emperor Claudius II. The problem is in determining which one was Saint Valentine, because records weren't always kept as closely, perhaps, as they ought to have been. And as the martyrs became more famous and each one was associated with this celebration, every hometown of all three martyrs wanted their guy to be Saint Valentine. One of them was Saint Valentine, but nobody was quite sure which guy from which town had been Valentine. So they ended up for a while celebrating all three of them and calling them the Valentini. And then they picked one and it became Valentine and the Valentini, which sounds like a bad name for a pop group. But that was how it was shaping up. Valentine and the Valentini. Those three, one was executed by Claudius II for converting his jailers to the Christian faith. And one was executed by Claudius II for running something of an underground railroad, helping Christians who had been condemned to a harsh Roman prison to escape and get out of town and find asylum somewhere else. And the third was executed by Claudius II for performing forbidden secret marriage ceremonies. The deal was that Claudius had decided, I don't know if he was right or wrong, but he had decided that single men made better soldiers than married men. And so he passed a law that said that in a wide segment of the population, young men could not marry until they had first served an acceptable was determined by the administration, an acceptable term of military service, which might mean that you couldn't get married until you were too old to be of use to the army anymore. Might mean that. And many young men were very hesitant to give up the opportunity to marry their sweethearts before being compelled to go off to war. And this third Valentini was executed by Claudius II for performing secret, illegal marriage ceremonies for them. By medieval times, They wanted to pick this guy, the third one, the secret marrier, so that they could replace a kind of lewd and licentious pagan festival for the fertility cults that happened to be in February, the details of which are not such as we would like to discuss in this present setting. They wanted to replace that, so they decided that the real Valentine was the one who performed the secret marriage ceremonies, and the modern holiday was born. For what it's worth, modern scholarship has since concluded that the real Valentine was the guy who converted his jailers. But the holiday was already well in motion, and there has been no movement yet to set the record straight. I throw all that in for free because it is completely irrelevant to the sermon. Well, not completely. It allows me to launch into this. As we are discussing last week and this week, walking worthy of the calling by which we have been called, that call of Jesus Christ. And what does it mean to walk worthy of your calling in Jesus Christ? Last week, as we considered the first step, which was humility, I tried to give you a pretty in-depth linguistic analysis of that word so we would understand what we were talking about. And in the process of that, I tried to teach you that the Greek language outside the New Testament often reflected a different way of thinking, particularly about words describing human qualities, than the writers of the New Testament meant when they used those words. This is true largely of words describing human qualities all through the New Testament. Take the word love, since this is Valentine Day, and know that when those secular Greek writers who coined the words that the New Testament writers would use talked about love, as when they talked about almost all human qualities, they saw things as points on a continuum. And they would have said hate and love is a single emotion. Hate and love are the same feeling. It depends on where you are on the continuum. On this end of it, you are wrapped up in what we call hate, and on this end of it, you are wrapped up in what we call love, but it's all one feeling, and there's a lot of points in between. And what the wise man will do, the secular Greek said, is find the way to live in the middle somewhere so that he is in control of the emotion rather than controlled by it. He will not be lost in the grip of what we call hate on one end, and he will not be lost in the grip of what we call love on the other end. Rather, he will always be in control of that single emotional state somewhere in the middle. Now, I need to tell you, the Bible, although it borrowed the words from the Greek language, tends to look at things in a different light. The Bible thinks of contrasting opposites. Love and hate are not the same thing. And if you are filled with hate, there's no room in you for love. And if you are filled with love, it casts out hate because they are radical opposites opposed to one another. You need to understand this way of thinking. Sometimes it's okay to look at a thing and think of points along a continuum, but the view of the Bible for your life really depends on the contrasting opposites point of view, because the Bible says you are going to step out of one world and into another. Your old you is going to die and be done away with, and a new you is going to be born in you by the Holy Spirit of Jesus Christ. You're going to give up all of this. but you're going to come into all of this. And it's not a matter of covering gradations on a continuum until you get there. It's not a matter of climbing a ladder. It's not a matter of discipline and tending your mind and your body. It's letting God change you from what you used to be to a whole new thing that is completely different. This is important to grasp if you want to separate biblical thought from secular thought. Now, all that said, I'm ready to move to the second quality in our walking worthy of the calling. The first was, as you may remember, humility. That was a big long word in the Greek, tapinophrosune, which I didn't expect you to remember. You might do better with this one, because Greek does have some short words. Praus. One syllable. Praus. And it is generally translated either gentle or meek, depending on the version of the Bible that you use. And in the secular world, the difference in interpretation is the same. In that secular Greek world, they would have thought of this word for gentle or meek as points on a continuum, and they would say that it's all the same thing. Harshness, gentleness. It's just where you happen to be. And to be wise, you need to be in control of yourself so that you will always be just as harsh or gentle as you need to be for the specific situation. Because situations change, and sometimes you may need to be more rough and tough and hostile. And sometimes you may need to be more gently persuasive. But the point is to be in control of yourself so that you travel the continuum according to your need. The Bible says gentleness and harshness are not the same things at all. They are polar opposites. And the people of God are not called upon to be harsh. They are called upon to be gentle. At least as gentle as possible in every situation. The secular thought believed that a king needed to be gentle to some subjects and harsh to other subjects, and certainly harsh to people who were not his subjects, enemies of his country. The secular Greek thought was that judges often needed to be harsh, but if you had a first-time offense or if there were mitigating circumstances or whatever else, sometimes you could be gentle, adapt it to the situation. The Bible does not take that view. Now, the word praus in the Bible and in associated literature written by Christians at the time of the Bible has a pretty wide latitude of usage. So let me acquaint you with just a little bit of it. Now, the first one, not so much in the Bible, but in other literature written by Christians around the time. It was often applied to food, and you had food that was harsh, and you had food that was gentle. We still understand the distinction. It's like you go to the chili cook-off and you taste one chili and you say, this is a nice savory chili. And then you taste another chili and you say, holy smokes, this guy is nuts. He's crazy. He's trying to kill me. I've been harmed. Gentle. Nicole talked to me about my chili. After the cook-off, I think her suggestion was that it should be called the Wrath of God chili or something like that. Gentle. Harsh. The background of the word when it talks about people in social situations is generally this. Now, they'd never heard of sandpaper, so their metaphor was pumice, but they said you have velvet and you have pumice, I will say sandpaper. And some people are velvety. Some people are sandpapery. How many of you know people who are sandpapery? Yeah. And is that 90 grit, 20 grit, or aluminum oxide? Abrasive. And when people rub up against you, that is when your life intersects theirs, you know pretty quickly whether they are velvety or sandpapery. But the most usages of this word for meek or gentle in the Bible derive from talking about animals and using the animals as a metaphor for us humans. And what they mean in this realm is that tamed, domesticated animals are, they say, gentle. And wild animals are, they say, harsh. Maybe you can pick up your little house cat and pet it, not mine, but yours maybe, and all will be well. But if you stumbled across a raccoon in the backyard and tried the same procedure, you might end up short fingers, because the one is gentle and the other is harsh. And mostly this applies to domesticated livestock, animals used for work. They would say that an animal that is broken to the yoke, is gentle. But an animal that is not broken to the yoke is harsh. And if you ever had to plow with one or the other, you would recognize the difference immediately. All that said, let me tell you that the word comes up quite a bit in the New Testament. In James, it uses this very metaphor when it says that the tongue is like a wild animal that cannot be tamed. And all kinds of other animals have been tamed, gentled, but not the tongue. In Matthew, in the same verse that I cited last week about Jesus speaking of our taking his yoke, where he said that he was lowly, he used the other word, he used both words for the first steps in walking worthy of the calling. For he said, I am meek and lowly. Or if you have another version, gentle and humble. Jesus said of himself. And he said, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. We always manage to leave that out. And learn from me. For I am meek and lowly. And the picture that he had in mind was this. The way to gentle an animal was you took the harsh, wildish animal and you put it in a double yoke with an animal that was two things. One, already gentled. And two, bigger and stronger than the animal you wanted to have gentled. You yoke them together so that the bigger, more powerful, but gentle animal would break the smaller, weaker, but wilder animal to the yoke. You always wanted the big, strong one to be the gentle one who helped break the wild one. When we lived in Shady Valley, Tennessee, they told the story of a fellow who claimed that he could gentle an ox in a yoke by putting himself in with it. He tried to demonstrate it one day to a fellow, got into the yoke with an ox that had not been broken, got dragged out of the field over some stumps across the creek through a briar patch, and finally the ox got tired. And they took him out of the yoke. Because you want the one to be doing the gentling to be bigger and stronger. When Jesus said, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly, he's picturing a double yoke. and he's the stronger, but gentle on the one side. And we are the weaker, but in need of gentling on the other side. Matthew also used the same word in Matthew 5:5 in the Beatitudes. Blessed are the meek, or gentle, depending on your version, for they shall inherit the earth. And in Matthew 21:5, describing Jesus at the scene of the triumphal entry, he said, your king comes unto you gentle, mounted on a donkey. In all three instances, strength is assumed. Jesus is the stronger on the one side of the yoke, who will break you as the weaker on the other side of the yoke. The meek do not inherit the earth because they're a bunch of weaklings. Meek isn't weak. And when Jesus rode into Jerusalem, how many of you agree with me? He was strong. He did not have to be gentle. He could have just started knocking heads and got whatever he wanted, and no one could have resisted his strength. But he chose to be gentle on that occasion. To be gentle assumes that you have the strength to be otherwise. But choose gentleness. And if we are to walk worthy of the calling by which we have been called, we must become more like the one who called us. And he said of himself, I am meek, gentle, and lowly, humble. We have some strength to exercise. How shall we exercise it? I will tell you that over the years, in my relationships with other preachers, I have known preachers who told me that the thing to do and what they did was to just crack the whip on their congregation. I keep my congregation in line, buddy. One person steps out and I am on them like ugly on an ape, and I put them back where they belong, and we don't have any problems. And I always think to myself, that's got to be the wrong approach. Surely we must be gentle. And I've known many Christians who just say, look, I just tell the truth. I just tell it like it is. People don't have to like it, and they usually don't, but I pull no punches. I call a spade. I lay it out, and you can just take it because I tell the truth. Well, yeah, we should tell the truth. But I believe most of the time the truth can probably be told more gently than some of us tend to tell it. And there are those parents that I talk to the kids about in the children's moment who are going to knock some sense into you. And most of us figure out that that is not the way. And you know people. You have known people who can pull it off, who can be firm and honest and gentle. And those people are walking worthy of the calling. So must we all. If we are to be worthy of the calling with which we have been called by Jesus Christ, the first two steps are these: humility and gentleness. To become meek and lowly. It may be time for many of us to consider our calling and to have a reorientation of our thinking and acting. To stop thinking more highly of ourselves than we ought. And to treat all people just as gently as possible. If you need to make that reorientation, you can do that. At the end of the passage, it says that Jesus gives gifts. And He will give you these. If you have some other need, this moment is still for you. If you have a need for prayer, if you have a need for salvation, if you might desire to become a member of this congregation, if you don't know what all that entails, you come see me and I'll be sure and tell you what it means to be a member. All people are welcome to worship, but there is another step. If you have some other need that I have not mentioned, you can address that right now if you would stand.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our faithful listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church podcast. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.